Hi, my name is Volker, and this is Applications, the Type 03 Community Podcast.
Welcome to Application, the Type 03 Community Podcast. One, two. Welcome to Application, the Type 03 Community Podcast. I'm Jeffrey A. McGuire. You can call me Jam. And this is where we celebrate the Type 03 community, sharing your stories, talking about your projects, and the difference you make in, around, and with Type 03 CMS. In today's exciting episode of Application, the Type 03 Community Podcast, you'll hear the second part of a conversation I had with Type 03 CMS Chief Product Officer Volker Graubaum in March 2021. In the first part of our conversation, Volker and I talked about how he sees Type 03 CMS, the Type 03 Association, and the community's company Type 03 GmbH as enablers for everyone who builds, uses, and benefits from the Type 03 project ecosystem. Go back and listen to Season 1, Episode 11 of Application for more. In this episode, we learn about Volker's origin story in Type 03 starting in 2002 and hear some of his stories and memories from the community's early days, the introduction of the Extension Manager, the very first Type 03 training session, Volker's first time at Type 03's famous community tech conference and snowboarding event, Type 03 Board, while finishing his graduation thesis, which was a business plan for the Type 03 agency that Volker went on to found and run for 20 years, even though the banks assessing it told him that the internet was only a passing fad. In terms of Volker's role as Chief Product Officer, we touch on the importance of finding and developing new groups of users, new geographies, and verticals in places where Type 03 is not an obvious choice. Volker tells a neat story about how Type 03 was doing headless and decoupled before it was cool, and before those were actually terms for that, as far as I know, and makes a really superb point, saying, as a content management and delivery system, we have to know how to tell good stories and create good content. If we don't know that, we aren't able to deliver and manage it. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed speaking with Volker to make it. So let's shift gears for a minute. How and when did you get involved with Type 03? How did you discover it?
Actually, it was 2002, I think.
So, what version was that?
That was between version 3.3 beta 4 and 3.5. So it was actually at the time where Caspar said, oh, I have to do something, and asked his wife if he has 2 weeks' time alone in his cellar. And then he came out, and then the extension manager was there.
Okay.
So that's actually at least how I remember that. Caspar, please be patient if you hear that, and it was not exactly like that. But that is a story we all heard. And so, yeah, actually, that was, I think, in the summer 2002. And then, because we was the web team, my later business partner and I were the leader of the web team of the Nord Academy, a private high school where the dev days used to be a few years ago or so. And there we was searching for a new content management system for the university or for the, universities, I think the better word than high school.
Oh, is it a Hochschule?
It's a Fachhochschule.
Oh, so I believe that those are called polytechnic in English, at least in the old days. But anyway, yes, a technical university.
So, we was looking, and then we decided, Type 03 seems to be the best system, also, especially because the new extension manager and the possibility to create easily extension for that was a key feature at that time. And then there was the first training. I think it was in October, November 2002. And guess who was our trainer at that time?
Wait, am I really supposed to guess?
Yeah.
Was it Matthias Schreiber?
Yes, exactly. So.
Okay.
It was there we meet Matthias the first time. And then, yeah, it was a really funny weekend where we learned really a lot of things. And
once again, I had some real connectivity problems during this conversation. Here, we got cut off, and I pick up the thread where we had left off. You were at the Nord Academy, and there was the first ever Typo3 training, and Matthias Schreiber was the trainer.
Exactly. At that time, yeah, it was a really great weekend, and we learned a lot of not only about Typo3, but also about the community. And then 3 or 4 months later, not sure about when the meeting was exactly, we was driving together with another community member from Lübeck to Splügen to be member or to become part of the first Typo3 snowboard. No, not the first, but our first Typo3 snowboard tour.
Typo3 board.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's how everything started and how
describe
we jumped in the community.
Describe the community in 2002.
Oh, it was actually, it was 2003, the snowboard tour. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it was a very, let's say, very small community at that time. But yeah, it was a really great, very familiar atmosphere. We had... all the fun doing snowboarding and doing other things. We had the study thing we have to do because we had to finish a study work together with my partner. So we had only a few days in the mountains and the rest we had to work. But
so you were up in the mountains, but you were actually being good students.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. At least little bit. And so... yeah, and but we met Kaspar at that time. He was there, of course, and there were, all the people from the early times there. I think it was also Olivier's first snowboard tour, Olivier Dobakau. And yeah, it was fun because we was coding, we was having fun, and that's what the Typo3 community was at that time, and for me it is still like that, since we don't have a very hard, let's say, competition thinking on that.
Yeah.
Because the goal is not that we compete between each other, but that we are competing with other systems. Mostly.
Right, and I would like to refine that even further. Not trying to, bring down other open source systems or ruin them or take stuff away. I think it's especially talking with Matthias Schreiber a lot. He's very strongly convinced that there's so much work out there and so much internet and so much digital activity that it's easier to build market and go new places and perhaps convince people to move away from proprietary solutions into open source rather than, trying to compete with WordPress or Drupal or our friends and allies, really people who share the same code and the same ideals.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, there will be, again, we have to be more present in some markets, and then we will compete it, but that's not the first goal. Actually, when we are talking about Drupal, for example, we have, of course, two sides of Drupal. We have Acquia on the one side, and on the other side, we have the Drupal community, which is very open too. And Drupal is very successful in activating people to bring themselves in the community work.
Right.
And I think that is a place where we could learn a lot of things from Drupal and how we can focus on including the people. And Rhys has written something about the taker and the makers, and finding the balance.
I'll post a link to everything we talk about in the show notes, obviously. I just wanted to say that that's a nice way to look at other communities and other products, right? The developers and agency owners and community members in Drupal are very open. They're really into PHP. They love open source. And, you know, when Typo3, Benny and whoever it was working on the patch, you know, fixed the FAR wrapper security vulnerability, that was immediately, you know, publicized and contributed. And Drupal took the patch that went into Typo3 and other systems took it as well. And like, there's a real natural cooperation there, you know, and then you can look at the commercial level or the promotional level or all these other levels where Acquia comes in. And, you know, Acquia has, you know, full disclosure, my former employer, for all the good that Acquia has done in some ways, you know, there's some things that people can legitimately question. And yet I think that the creation of Acquia and made it possible for everyone in open source to reach higher, you know, because Acquia really positions itself as competition with Adobe and even bigger things. So I think that all of us still have way more doors open because of the things that Drupal has done and gone through. And I think that it is far from a perfect example. So we can also all learn from each other.
Yeah, exactly. I think so too.
So jumping back, I want to jump back now.
Yeah.
And just mention that in my conversation recently with Adrian Zimmermann, I think every third sentence talking about the Typo3 community, he'd be like, yes, and of course, Typo3 board and snowboarding and Typo3 board and snowboard. He loves, like, he's such a snowboard fanatic. It was really fun talking with him about that.
I think it's very interesting to see because when you are looking, even in other communities, they have fun events, but when it starts on thinking about events in Typo3, we first had fun events, and then became more professional in the time.
That is so interesting because it's definitely the fun came late to. I mean, of course, everybody had some drinks, everybody had a party or whatever, but like getting together for the purposes of having fun is really an afterthought for most communities. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And, so talk to me now, please, about how you founded your agency and that, you know, the company that you ran for 20 years and some of the people you brought in.
Oh, actually, it's we found the study, not thesis, but work we was writing in Splügen was actually the business plan because we had to study entrepreneuring.
Nice.
And, so we was writing the business plan for our company.
Aha.
At that time.
Wow.
And it was it was totally focused on open source and it was quite funny because we don't wanted to collect money, but the business plan was given to different banks to get a feedback for the voting for the results.
Uh-huh.
And the bank said, "Oh, it's a really solid business plan, but the internet, isn't it dead?"
The internet is just a passing fad.
Yeah, it's like, and that was quite fun. But and then we founded Typo3.
Did they tell you to do something else? Did they say like you should publish a newspaper? Or
no, it was just a study work. So it's I started Enet, and my partner joined later full time. In the beginning, he was there, and at that time, I already worked with a lot of people from the Typo3 community on a freelance base, and I always try to think about how we can solve things so that it can come back to the core. And later I became bug maintainer. That was a time where I was still coding. Mm-hmm. We've founded the Commerce Initiative. It wasn't an initiative in that time, but three agency was together was building a complete new shop system for Type 3.
Aha.
And at that time, it seems to be the right way, but it would have been necessary to spend much more energy in that to make it stable future based.
What year are we talking about?
Oh, I think 2005.
Right. So anyone listening now who doesn't remember the 2005 internet, there were not web services. There wasn't e-commerce, via API. There wasn't this wasn't a thing really. There so much of what we take for granted now wasn't there. And it made perfect sense to start your own CMS in the late 90s and the early 2000s. It made perfect sense to build whatever it was that you needed into the package that you were using. I joined open source in 2005, and there wasn't in 2002 and 2005, there wasn't GitHub. There wasn't even Git, right? And there wasn't, there wasn't version control as a service. There wasn't all this free stuff. There wasn't one official way to deal with patches or pull requests or whatever. So communities had to build everything from scratch. So even though that sounds crazy now, because there's a 100 different things that you can plug in to do e-commerce, at that point it made sense, right? Now we see that you would have had to spend $100 million and be super specialized to succeed with it. But at the time, that it wasn't clear that that's the way the internet was going to go, right? It was one possible future.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that was what we were building there. And the extension was used in quite a big shops. We worked together with the Marketing Factory on that, for example. Nice. And later then I stopped coding more and more. And then we had, for example, Christian Kuhn in our company.
Lolly,
who is now working for Benny. Frank Negler used to work for us, CTO at the GmbH.
Yeah.
And we had, actually, we was very near to the community at that time already, motivated to make the community more professional. Yeah, so one point was working on the events. I used to be part of the event committee, and at that time, later I became leader of that. I started, as mentioned before, the first Type 3 barcamp, because I was very clear on the idea that we have to look around. We shouldn't be focused on Type 3, what we are doing and how we are doing it. But we should also look around if we could learn from others. And
that's still a situation, though, in Type 3. And so many communities look inwards first. And so do you think that's part of your job now as Chief Product Officer to also look around as well and see where Type 3 fits?
Yeah, definitely. It's a very important part of my work, I would say, because of course it's important that we are focused on what we are. We couldn't say we are something totally different than what we are, but we of course have to second, we have to listen to the community, to all the people who are using Type 3, and know from the market what they need. But to adapt new user groups or verticals, it's very important that we are listening to the market itself and have a look what are people doing right now and what are they doing good, where can we learn things, and so on.
So how do you research a market that doesn't know about you? How do you find and define and discover and communicate with people who could really benefit from using Type 3, but don't necessarily know about it or consider it now?
There are a lot of people where it's very easy to explain that Type 3 is a really good choice, but they're afraid of the market, especially when we look outside, I would say, Dach and Netherlands. So
German-speaking Europe and Benelux, let's say.
Yeah, exactly. Because outside, Type 3 hasn't a wide range so that you can find a lot of agencies and all that. And I talk with a Swedish company who says actually they would take Type 3, but they're afraid that they are bound to me as an agency. Because there's no other agency who can do Type 3.
Ah, okay. So outside of Benelux and DACH, there is less of a local service provider market.
Exactly. It is. We have it in the Eastern Europe area. There are more. We have it in France. It's not so small, but then it's becoming smaller. There are a few in Spain. There are a few in UK, but you have to search for them.
Right.
It's not an
obvious choice. There aren't those agencies just floating around. And in Düsseldorf, I think that there are maybe 150 Type 3 agencies or 1,000 or something, right? So it's not the local choice. Okay. But how do we get the word out to the people we could still help in those places? And how do we maybe, and then is the problem also convincing more agencies to use Type 3?
Yeah, that's also one part. There's a great initiative, the Kokomon initiative, for example, which are focusing on creating new onboarding material.
Kokomon is a Type 3 community marketing and communications initiative that's happening in 2020.
Yeah, that's one part, to find new agencies and give them the right documentation and onboarding material so they can easily start. Mm-hmm. Then there are companies who say, oh, Type 3, isn't that the old system? There, it's quite easy to show that we are a very active community with a lot of integrations, a lot of active installation.
Very up-to-date code base.
Yeah, and especially in terms of security, it's very, very good because we have a very, very good security team.
Plus, small ad for Type 3's architecture, apart from an excellent security team and best practices and using really up-to-date coding standards, the fundamental decision to have a back-end system that can talk with any front-end system you want, also since the beginning of time, essentially, is a huge advantage when it comes to security because you can't accidentally set something in the front end that opens up the back end to all sorts of attacks. It's separate logins, separate displays. It can be, and of course nowadays with headless and front end frameworks and native apps and everything, all Type 3 is just sitting there already to communicate with a digital front end world. But anyway, from a security perspective, really good decision.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks. Sure. So yeah, but of course there are others. So we have to tell much better stories about what we can do. So for example, you just mentioned headless. There is this headless initiative. We have also, it's not on the on the new concept of how you're creating decoupled system or headless systems. As you mentioned, we are a decoupled system since 2002. And we have to do our homework in terms of more stable APIs and so on. But actually, Type 3 is decoupled, and there is a very good headless package where you can easily interact with different JavaScript front ends. It's out of the box ready for a view. JS front end, and people are working on React and on other topics. So it is all there, what we need. And that's what I mean with the strengths of Type 3.
Okay.
That we have the core and we have all the add-ons and coupled with the flexibility the core brings with you.
There's a lot of communication to do now.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. The technology's there. The community's there. That can always grow. That can always improve. Mm-hmm. Now more people need to hear about it. Speaking of telling good stories, what is the coolest thing that you've ever built or done with Type 3?
What's the coolest thing? It's actually, I think we use Type 3 for a big tourism company, and they had this iPad catalog.
Mm-hmm.
and we make an aggregation of all the content coming from outside, possibility to add the content and enrich the content in Typo3. And then we have created a grid system in the backend. So the people could use the different content types and the different content structures and put it at the right place in their structure. And the grid we had in the backend was actually the grid we had on the iPad. Mm-hmm. So after that, we pull it out to the iPad, the content, and then they had a really, really great iPad app.
And, so was that an in-store sales tool for them to take people through holidays, or was it, could I use that?
No, it's more a catalog. It's a more print catalog to read. They don't have the buying button at that time, but it was getting the experience of all the great places they had. Uh-huh. And what is quite cool is that actually what I'm describing here right now is the job headless systems are doing and what they are saying, what they are the best for.
Right.
And when I now think about when we have done that, it was, I think, 2012 or 13. So.
And you were using it to integrate diverse data sources, enrich and organize the data, and then output it to a native iPad format. In 2012. That is pretty cool.
It is.
Yeah.
And when we are talking about other stories, it's not what I have done. Actually, I'm not in the company. I don't have to say what my agency is, but what you can do with Typo3. And I really like the case where you use Typo3 as a kiosk system, mm-hmm. so that it was running on all the point of sales on a kiosk system. All Typo3 installations which are interacting with a backend server, which are sending out data to all the kiosks, but also can work locally. Mm-hmm. So we have this this point of sale functionality there.
Wow.
And I think it was done in 2010, something like that. Whew. So...
Because
we have, in terms of technology, we moved on, and Typo3 is going the way with it. But in terms of use cases, we can tell all the cool use cases we are doing right now and have done and built it already 10 years ago, where it has no name for that.
Right. And before it was cool. And
yeah.
Interesting. And, you know, I wonder if the people who've built that stuff, you know, 10 years ago and before it had a name and before it was a trend and I wonder if we forget to tell those stories because it was, you know, so long ago and it's so obvious that we can do it. Do we forget that other people need to know that stuff or that that stuff is still up to date and relevant?
Yeah, I think we forgot it at that time. Mm. We used to be very focused on the community. I'm not sure what the founding year of the association was, 2005, 2006, something like that, I think. Since we don't have this commercial view on that, there was a lot of agencies working with that who has a commercial view, but internally, the community don't have this commercial view. And it's like, it's not very interesting to tell the story from a business value side. Of course, we had the conferences and the developer days where we are showing really cool use cases from a technical view.
Right.
So you can find a lot of talks about really cool technical solutions we have built.
Sure.
But we are not so focused on making the business.
Yeah. And that's actually another thing that I've ended up focusing a lot of my career on. You, the technologist, have a super great idea that has a real world application, and you get super duper obsessed with the implementation and exactly how to structure the API and how do we do the versioning and what's the integration point and all that stuff that's really, really interesting and important. And no marketer, no budget owner without a technical background can even listen to you. It's just computer words, right? Even if you're explaining a really, really great idea. And I love translating between, okay, you know, good, great technical ideas and then the value that they actually deliver. That's like, that's something that I really, really love doing. And I was in open source back when it was only developers and it was only technical people. And I know exactly what you're talking about. And if you even tried to bring a case study to a conference, people are like, I had some of my early talks when I was trying to understand what I was thinking, and I was presenting these crossover ideas, and I was told, I'm not going to name events, but I'm still a little bit hurt. I was told that our conferences don't want soft talks. You know, if there's not a code example in your talk, don't even bother applying next time.
Yeah, and I think you used to have it before too. And when I take over the conference,
right?
I think 2013, it was the first conference I was completely responsible for. I described how technical a talk may be, that no code in slides.
Okay. All right.
So that was the switch, because actually when the conference was the first time was, I think, 2005, and it was the first official event, except the fun events we had.
Okay.
And then it was really cool because, as you mentioned, we was all developers at that time, and all technical people, and we had use cases, but you have to show how you have created the use cases. Sure. And not what is the story behind and the why. And then later, I think in two years later, the Type3 developer was started.
Ah, the developer
was very on code and totally focused on developers. And that was totally cool and great because you could learn so much and had hand-on sessions and all that. And But the conference still stays at, let's say, on a top-level tech conference. Yeah,
I've always found that interesting in coming to Type3 from the outside, or coming back to it, or however you want to say, the idea of specialized events. And I know that all of this is in discussion again, and the pandemic and the corona and everything is, who knows what we'll ever do anymore. I love, actually, as a result of the corona times, that I spoke at a Frankfurt user group last week or the week before, and I can go to a user group anywhere and I can really be part. I think the community building, if we keep live streaming and keep participating in our events, I think that's amazing. But
yeah, definitely.
Anyway, what I was getting to before was just really fascinating that there's a Type3 con, which is sort of business and technology presented in a way that it's interesting to business. And then you have the dev days, where you're allowed to completely geek out and like talk in code and just like talk about whatever cool implementation and the new JavaScript library. And then, you know, and then you have the university days, which are a user use case, a vertical that has its own conference talking about the technology, how it helps there. And I just, it's plus then Type3 board, which is a really good excuse to do some winter sport while technically being at a conference, you know. But I was really fascinated by how the Type3 breaks these things up into smaller conferences. I think that helps choose sessions and audiences and so on. On the one hand, I think that it may be the Drupal model of having one conference for everything is a great community builder, right? Where people have chances to interact with each other on any level. But you know, everything has its strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, I think so either. But what I started with the conference is that I say, okay, no code on slides. And that was, I think, first in Amsterdam. The year before, we had a tech day, we had a business day and a community day. So we have focused topics a little bit, more theme specific on one conference. And then we later had the award in Amsterdam. There was the Type3 award.
Yeah.
There when you joined us.
That was a great evening.
Yeah, it was. And actually, it was like, making Typo3 more open at the events. We used to invite other open source communities and products before, but we invited the technical people before.
Mm.
And I think starting with Amsterdam, it was the first time that we invited different people, not only the technical guys, to the conference, and that we have talks from people who don't know Typo3 in any way, but can tell things about content creation or storytelling and all that. So that all belongs to the community, and actually Typo3 is as a content management system or a content management and delivery system, it's used to create stories, create content, and tell the stories outside and bring it to all the people out there. And so we have to know how we are creating good stories and telling good stories and creating good content. If we don't know that, we aren't able to deliver it and manage it.
Thanks to the Typo3 Association for sponsoring this podcast. Thank you, B13 and Stephanie Kreutzer, for our logo. Merci beaucoup, Patrick Gaumont, Typo3 developer and musician extraordinaire, for our theme music. Thanks again to today's guest. If you like what you heard, don't forget to subscribe in the podcast app of your choice and share Application, the Typo3 community podcast, with your friends and colleagues. If you didn't like it, please share it with your enemies. Would you like to play along and suggest a guest for the podcast? Do you have questions or comments? Reach out to us on Twitter at Typo3Podcast. You can find show notes, links, and more information in our posts on typo3.org. Remember, open source software would not be what it is without you. Thank you all for your contributions.
Cut, cut, cut. Cool. So I said that. Cutty, cut, 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 cut back to our actual podcast.
Cut on, please. okay. Cut. Genau.
Cut.
Cut. Actually, we have to take a 2 minutes bio break, but bio break now.
Okay, we are back. After a very... How was your bio break, Volker? Mine was very satisfying.
Yeah.
I also got a tiny coffee.
Yeah, actually, I have great water.
Uh-huh.
And I'm doing good things with the water.
Oh,
Viva con aqua.
Right. So is that like local water that's made fuzzy rather than driving water all around the world? Something like that?
Yeah, actually, it's local water, but it's they are spending money they are earning for better things. I think for that other people have water in areas where it's not free.
Great. Excellent. Very, very good. Doing what we can.
So cut.